Conor McGregor is becoming the new Brett Favre. He's unretired again. Conor stating that he accepted the UFC bout versus Dustin Poirier on January 23rd, but he wants the fight to happen at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, home of the Dallas Cowboys only. However, McGregor has only verbally agreed to the fight. There is no bout agreement just yet. Poirier says in Wednesday's Ariel Helwani's MMA show that the UFC has yet to reach out to him about that fight. Max Kellerman, what's going on with Conor?
Well, first of all, this is how gangster the UFC is. You want to get Conor back in the ring, or in the octagon, sorry. You want to do it in a fight he'll win, right? To get him winning and not in a blowout against a guy who's, you know, way over the hill. And you'd like to be able to sell it to the public with a story. And Poirier's the right opponent for that, but it's still really dangerous. Conor opens like a 2-1-ish favorite. That means Poirier has real chances. It's a rematch, of course, because Conor blew him out in the first round of their first fight. But Poirier has real wins in the UFC. He's a very good fighter. And generally, although Conor won the first fight, when a guy whose best kind of approach is striking versus a BJJ guy, the history of the sport has been the grappler, ground guy can have a styles advantage, particularly if the striker's been off for a while. So, you know, like Gaethje, Poirier's beaten Gaethje. Poirier's really good. I think Conor is, this is the nature of the UFC. There are no gimmies. I think Conor has to be serious about his MMA career if he's willing to fight Poirier, even though he's the favorite. It's, as I said, only 2-1. It's a 33% chance. That means people think Poirier wins. And by the way, the winner very well could be in line for the winner of Nurmagomedov and Gaethje for all the marbles at lightweight, which is an excellent division. This is actually legitimately big MMA news and real Conor McGregor news, Stephen A., not like this is a way for Conor to make a ton of money boxing someone, or Conor's going to come back in a gimme fight. That's not what this is.
I totally agree with you from the standpoint that Poirier, even though he got knocked out by Conor McGregor in the first round, that was in 2014. He's been one of the top lightweights in the world since 2017. So this is not a gimme fight, and we got to respect the man where it's due and understand that, you know, he could potentially beat Conor McGregor, although I doubt it. Here's my thing, though. This is just a personal preference because the fight itself, Conor McGregor is great for the UFC. Conor McGregor is great for sports because I think he's box office, and I always want to see him fight. Here's my issue. Max correctly predicted that Nurmagomedov would beat Conor McGregor. I knew that Nurmagomedov was significantly a better wrestler, and I knew that obviously if he got Conor McGregor to the ground, it would be lights out and stuff like that. And that's what ended up happening because he got mauled to death, even though he stood up at times against Conor McGregor and was throwing haymakers and connected on one or two of them. My thing is, I always applauded Conor McGregor, however, because he hadn't really had a real fight in the UFC for a couple of years or so. The only fight he had was collecting $100 million for that exhibition against Floyd Money Mayweather in a boxing match. And so for him to go from that to get into the octagon against a guy like Nurmagomedov, all right, and last four rounds, there was a time when he was getting slaughtered, and it looked like he was getting slaughtered in the second round, and you had people screaming, stop the fight, stop the fight. But Conor McGregor survived and still kept going. And I said to myself, if this brother got himself in shape and was completely focused on fighting in the octagon, I would love to see a rematch against him. Here's my advice to Conor McGregor, because I believe that's who he truly, truly wants. He wants a rematch against Nurmagomedov. This is just my personal opinion on the outside. I'm not Ariel Helwani and Joe Rogan and those guys who know the sport backwards and forwards. I'm just sitting from a bird's eye view spectating. If Conor McGregor really wants Nurmagomedov, not only do you win this fight, Max, you also shut the hell up a little bit in this regard. Nurmagomedov despises this man. It is clear.
Yeah.
He does not like Conor McGregor.
He disrespected his family.
And it disrespected his family. He felt Conor McGregor disrespected his family, his religion, everything, his country, everything. Okay, he doesn't like the guy. That's usually important in this. That's usually not important in this regard. Usually that's a reason to get into the fight. Nurmagomedov doesn't want to give him any shine. So the more Conor McGregor bloviates and talks smack and wants Nurmagomedov, the more Nurmagomedov is determined to make him wait. He will not give him an inch of publicity or shine in any way. He will sit up there and say, I know it's torturing this guy that I beat him up the first time I went against him. I'm going to make him wait because he doesn't like him. So if you want Nurmagomedov, Max, if he wants Nurmagomedov, he might just fight and just be quiet. Because Nurmagomedov might not fight him. Just to torture him by making him wait.
I think that's an interesting point, but that's just not in Conor McGregor's nature. Conor McGregor is a showman, but the reason he connects with fans is not just because he's a showman. Primarily, it's because he has guts. I mean, you have to have guts to get in the octagon, period.
Absolutely.
But on Conor's level, we've seen in combat sports, guys try to be kind of careful. Conor got in there with Nurmagomedov. I thought that, I guess you have to at a certain point, but not a great idea styles-wise and where they were in their careers, and maybe not even on their best day, right? I like Nurmagomedov in that fight. Conor fights Diaz twice. Conor fight, like, even the Floyd Mayweather fight, which is for big money and everything, that takes guts to go into an event that big when you're that
Nobody's
far
questioning
out of
his
your
guts.
Depth and put on as good a show as he did. And even coming back against now a guy like Poirier is – this is why
guts.
He connects with fans, really, because he's a real I understand. He's a real fighter, and that's who he is, and also who he is a showman. He couldn't shut up if he tried.
Yeah. So, Shane, because Nurmagomedov's going to make him wait.
No question. He doesn't like him.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Everyone's assuming KD comes back as most of himself. That would be one of the only times in the history of medicine that a guy came off an Achilles and came back as even most of himself. KD's going to have to demonstrate that he's at least 80% of his former self, because that almost never happens after an Achilles. If he comes back at 80% of himself, which, by the way, is optimistic, he comes back as an all-star, not an MVP. It's very simple. No one has ever basically come back from that injury as the same player, ever. So the odds are against it.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to First Take, coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. A little rooftop action. That's where Stephen A. and I are. But Max, I wanted to come to you quickly here before we get into this next subject. I think you had wanted to mention something
when we had the discussion about the Achilles yesterday.
Did you just forget your own clarification?
Yes, I kept saying it. I'm on a little delay. Sorry about that, guys. I kept saying yesterday it almost never happened. And I got a little hyperbolic at the end. I said basically it never happened. However, there's one very recent example where it did happen. Of course, Breonna Stewart just won finals MVP, the Seattle Storm. Congratulations. And Jewel Lloyd and Alicia Clark tweeted at me yesterday about that. And they're absolutely right. So I want to correct that on the record. There's a very recent example of a top player, a great player, coming back from an Achilles as good as ever and winning finals MVP. Congratulations, Breonna Stewart, and, of course, the Seattle Storm. Nevertheless, that she is the exception that proves the rule. It almost never happens.
Yeah, shout out to Stewie and the Storm. But see, your hypothesis proved wrong, Max. That's exactly where we're going. Guys, Stephen A., we're also hearing that Adam Silver, the NBA season could be kicking off on Martin Luther King Day. That's maybe the projected date as of right now. But we had this conversation yesterday. You heard Max, and basically, essentially, what he's saying is that Kevin Durant might not even be Kevin Durant again. And the question I had asked him is who's in the way of potentially the Lakers repeating? Max had said the Warriors. We were also bringing up the Nets. Where are you on this in terms of KD, those Brooklyn Nets right across the bridge?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to point out that it will be the Golden State Warriors standing in the way of the Los Angeles Lakers. With Klay Thompson and Steph Curry coming back, they've got a top pick in the draft. Draymond is there as well. I definitely think if Klay Thompson and Steph Curry are healthy, look the hell out. They will at the very least be in the conference finals. I ain't sleeping on the Golden State Warriors at all. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are the greatest shooting or is the greatest shooting backcourt in the history of mankind. There has never been a backcourt that can shoot like these two brothers together, period. Now, with Kevin Durant, let me say this. I'm not as pessimistic about Kevin Durant as Max is. He's a career 27-point-per-game scorer, 49% shooting from the field, 38% from three-point range. This is not a guy, even though he is athletic, this is not a guy who has the success of his basketball career predicated on his athleticism. He is a marksman who happens to be 6 feet 11 with a 7'6 wingspan who can pull up from 30 anytime he wants. He can get his shot off without jumping. And that's not to say he can't jump. He didn't have to because that's how lanky and tall this dude is. And he's a sniper personified. Make no mistake about it. I expect Kevin Durant to come back next year in his sleep, averaging 25 a game. The question is the chemistry that he'll have with Kyrie Irving. But as
and
an individual.
New coach.
And the new coach, Steve Nash. But what I'm saying is, as an individual, I have no reservations. And when I say none, I mean zero. I have zero reservations about the individual greatness of Kevin Durant because his athleticism is not going to dictate his success. His marksmanship will because he can shoot the basketball. Now, I'll tell you where things get uncomfortable for Kevin Durant. And he's not going to like hearing this, but I don't give a damn because it's just the truth. We all know that Kevin Durant sat up there and decided to go to Golden State. It was a better move, blah, 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 blah. We also know you get tired because you and people saying LeBron's the king, he's the man, you're not. And you wanted to show that guess what? If you had some all-stars with you, watch the noise you would make. And obviously he did that. But LeBron James now sits here as the reigning defending NBA champion, a four-time champion who was a man amongst boys as a 35-year-old in his 17th season in the NBA, what some would be like, he lost a step athletically. Didn't matter. LeBron was dominant. You KD with Kyrie, particularly with Kyrie opening his mouth about, you know, it's the first time in his career that he's going to have faith in somebody, you know, taking a shot ahead of himself, blah, blah, blah. On the podcast that KD was emceeing, excuse me, when y'all come back, we're watching. Because there's an individual by the name of Jalen Rose. I don't know if you know who that is, but his name is Jalen Rose. He happens to be a very astute basketball.
I heard he upgraded himself with his wife.
Yeah, he's upgraded big time.
I think you like
him, Molly. Question about that. And here's the deal. Jalen Rose said he's got Brooklyn against L.A. in next year's NBA Finals. Well, guess what? They ain't getting there without KD. And by the way, we all anticipate that LeBron will probably be, Denver, of course, Utah. I'm sorry, Denver and the Clippers, you got to take that into account. But we're waiting. KD in the Eastern Conference, if KD's healthy and Kyrie's healthy, nobody wants to hear any excuses. As much as we were proud of the Miami Heat, you ain't looking at the Miami Heat and going like this. They should beat KD and Kyrie healthy in Brooklyn. We shall see.
Well, first of all, when you say KD was like, let me show you what I could do with some all-stars and went to Golden State, he had all-stars. He had plenty of all-stars throughout his career and couldn't get it done. He went to a place where there was another MVP. If you have two MVP-caliber players, not someone who once won the MVP awards, not operating on that level anymore, but both of you are MVP-caliber year in and year out, that team, in the absence of another team like that, is going to win the championship almost every year in NBA history. That's how it works. We're two MVP-caliber players on the same team. It just happened this year with LeBron and AD. Okay, let's start there. He went to Golden State, already a 73-win team, already an MVP-caliber player with Steph Curry. They added another MVP. It was a wrap after that. That doesn't prove a whole lot. We already know that Kevin Durant can really play. Here's the issue, Stephen A. You say His game isn't predicated on athleticism as much as some other guys. He can shoot. He's smooth. Matter of fact, he can pass nowadays. All those things. He can average 25 in his sleep, and I agree with that. But that's already being a little bit slick with the language, Stephen A. Averaging 25 in his sleep and being able to do a lot of great things offensively still and still being an all-star, I see Kevin Durant being able to do that. Yes, that's not just KD. KD's not just an all-star who can average 25. KD is an all-time great because then 7 feet with a 7'6 wingspan, because he can shoot, defend, he can now also pass, he can drive, he is an unstoppable kind of offensive player. I think the odds say that he will be somewhat diminished from that coming back from an Achilles. Still an all-star, but not an MVP. If you start to think of him, instead of a KD-level player, as more of a Paul George-level player, I know it's a little controversial the way he just played in the playoffs, but you know what I mean. An all-star, but not an MVP. And now you think of the Nets, it's not the same thing. Kyrie with another good all-star, but not an MVP-caliber player, that means that team has no players like that. So I that's what I'm trying to say. It may be subtle, but you can anticipate some diminishing of KD's value as a player. If he doesn't do that, if he winds up like Breonna Stewart, power to him. He will have upset the odds, as Tom Brady did, defying the cliff. But those are the odds. He's up
against the odds. Yeah, but what are you saying? Is he going to upset the odds or not?
Being 100% of himself.
Is he going to upset the odds or not?
I don't think he will.
Okay, I think he will.
I don't think he will. I agree with you. He'll be an all-star.
I think he has to.
But I don't know that he'll be an MVP.
And let me tell you something else, too. Not only do I think he will, I think it's going to be because he has to. Let's be very clear about something here. Kyrie Irving wouldn't be in Brooklyn if it were not for KD.
Yeah.
Brooklyn didn't want Kyrie. They didn't want Kyrie. They wanted KD. And they were willing to accept Kyrie because it was a package deal. They could slice it any damn way they want. I'm telling you what I know. It's a package deal. And we all know that Kyrie is box office, and this dude is spectacular. But in terms of what they were building, it worked with KD. And it would not have necessarily worked if it was just Kyrie. That's not what Brooklyn wanted. So it was definitely a package deal. We all understand that. In the end, they've talked. They're both champions. But they ain't LeBron at this moment in time. LeBron will be waiting for them, and they have to answer the call. What? That's the story about KD. Not whether or not he's going to still look the same.
Yeah, one last thing.
Supporting cast, Max, or say what you want to say. I'm just wondering who actually has the better team here when we're talking about the Lakers or the Nets. Outside of the
Nets
superstars.
Nets got a damn good team.
I'd say the Nets are deeper in terms of all-star caliber players. But the Lakers have two MVP-caliber players, and the Nets really have none if KD is diminished. I want to say one last thing about this, Stephen A. If you would have asked me before Ali fought George Foreman in the Rumble in the Jungle, who do I think he was going to do it? I'd have said no, I'm sure. I was 1 year old at the time. But he was a 5-1 underdog. The odds were against it because he'd been forced into exile for 4 years and was physically diminished. But because of that, and he pulled off the upset, he did the seemingly impossible, he's the greatest. Right? I've always thought, and I said, you remember, before he played on that bad Achilles, which they were calling a calf, and you were saying it's not going to affect his money anyway. I said, yeah, but it's going to affect the rest of his prime. He should not be playing. He chose to play. His Achilles ruptured. His prime may very well be affected going forward. But there is an opportunity there. Because if KD can come back from this and win a championship in Brooklyn, it will be his greatest accomplishment. And he will elevate himself into the all-time great talk with, you know, with obviously Michael Jordan and LeBron James and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and the like. So he has a chance to have his greatest moment if he's not as good as he used to be, in fact.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia,
visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Bill gets his signal caller back as Cam is cleared to rejoin his Patriot teammates in the AFC East. A double-digit loss against the Titans week 5 was not enough to knock the Bills out of the top spot just yet, but the Pats are nipping on Buffalo's heels. Former Patriot Damian Woody here with us now. Damian, always good to see you. We will get to you in just a second. But Stephen A., after that beatdown by Buffalo, folks are starting to kind of look at them differently. Tell me this. Are you having second thoughts about the Bills winning the AFC East?
I am. When I saw them get beat down by the Titans the way that they did, first of all, I don't know if Josh Norman is going to ever recover from that highlight reel, the way he got shoved aside by Derrick Henry. I mean, I love Josh, you know, but, I mean, that's a hard one to take right there. Max, to use one of your boxing analogies, that's like what happened to William Joppy when he went up against Felix Trinidad at the Garden years ago. You remember what that first round was like. That was just crazy. But y'all got to go to the highlights to see that one. But, I mean, that was just bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying that, it's one thing for the Titans to win. It's another thing for them to run roughshod over the Bills the way that they did. They still got a 2-game lead against the New England Patriots. Cam is coming back. You can't summarily dismiss the Bills. Please don't get me wrong. But, again, I always classify or categorize the difference between losing and getting beat up. Losing can happen to anybody.
Yeah.
But when you get beat up, well, that just shows your inferiority. And I think that that's what we saw from the Bills the other day. Again, it's just one game. I understand it. But considering that it's the AFC East that we're talking about, which the Patriots have dominated for the better part of the last 2 decades, with Cam coming back, watching how competitive New England was against Kansas City. Brian Hoyer stunk up the joint, but as a defense, they were very, very competitive and stuff like that. I can't count out the Patriots, not when the Bills showed up and acted like the Bills of old.
And let me add one more wrinkle to that, and that was the Titans after coming off a couple of weeks where they weren't even in their building and all those positive COVID tests. So they hadn't even had normal weeks, and they were still able to pull that off.
And had like 2 or 3 walkthroughs. That's it.
That's it. Yeah. Exactly. And they got the job done. Max?
Yeah, I like New England all along. I thought it was close. I think Josh Allen is, at this moment, not in the MVP conversation, though he can get his way back in there because he's an ascending quarterback and they got a defense, but they got whooped. I mean, it happens to everyone. You're going to get beaten. I know you are what your record says you are, but, I mean, the Patriots are a hell of a 2-2 team. Their one loss with Cam Newton occurred against the Seahawks, who are still undefeated, on a goal line stand by the Seahawks defense. You know, it's 1 yard this way or that way, and the Patriots win that game. But they lost fair and square. But it's just like that's a quality loss to have. Like, it doesn't really knock you down that much in my estimation. And then the other loss is to the Kansas City Chiefs when you don't have Cam Newton and the refs have a terrible call go against you and you're competitive throughout the game. Well, that's a hell of a 2-2 team. I don't care if they lose to Denver this week and they're 2-3. I'm still liking the Patriots in the AFC East. People forget Cam Newton, the best player in football the year he won the MVP. Took his team to a Super Bowl where his best receiver was his tight end and he was his own best running back. And now that dude has Bill Belichick? I don't care how many defections there are off the defense. You know how many elite and top-notch defenders I've seen Belichick trade for draft picks through the years, and the defense looks like it hasn't missed a beat? This is going to be a very well-coached team with the best quarterback in the division. I like the Patriots by a very little bit over a Bills team that I'm not going to start to underrate off of one bad loss.
Well, listen, I got to go with the Patriots. You know, the Patriots have had a stranglehold on the AFC East for 20 years. 20 years. And I know that was with Tom Brady. But the one thing we all agree on in pro football is coaching matters more in football than any other sport. And Bill Belichick is by far, in my opinion, the best coach that we have ever seen in this sport. And so I know a lot of people have talked about, you know, how the Bills have been nipping on the Patriots' heels for a couple of years now. And And rightfully so. Sean McDermott and company have been building that program up, and Josh Allen has been taking steps. But again, you know, when you're talking about an organization that has far and away been the best organization in the league now for quite some time, and went out here and got Cam Newton, and we've seen what Cam Newton has brought to this New England Patriots ball club. Max, you talked about it in the Seattle Seahawks loss. I mean, we're talking about the same weapons that Tom Brady had, and look what Cam Newton has been able to do with that offense. The fact that he's a dual-threat quarterback that teams have to pay close attention to, not only throwing but running the football, it just makes the Patriots much, much harder to defend. And when you have Coach Belichick and Josh McDaniels able to utilize the strengths of Cam Newton offensively, it makes that Patriots team hard to beat. And so what we saw from the Tennessee Titans, what we saw from the Buffalo Bills, is we saw a team that obviously was 4-0, and they just got punched in the mouth like Mike Tyson. I think the biggest question for the Bills is, how do you respond? How will Josh Allen respond? We don't know how Josh Allen is going to respond. But I know one thing. The Patriots have always been in these type of situations where they face adverse conditions, and they've always bounced back. So until I see someone dethrone the Patriots, I'm always going to give them the benefit of the doubt as far as who is the top dog in that division.
I think a couple of things that we all have to pay attention to is that the two shining moments for the New England Patriots this season, as far as I'm concerned, is in their losses. I mean, when you talk about the New England Patriots, again,
the two shining moments are in their losses?
They lost to Seattle, 35-30. Yep. They're at the one-yard line against Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks after Russell Wilson had thrown for like 5 touchdowns or whatever the case may be. You look at Cam Newton's guy, I mean, it was a predictable play. Seattle seemed like it knew what was coming, and as a result, they were able to stop them. But that's what it took for Seattle to beat that New England Patriots team. And then the last game they played against Kansas City was without Cam Newton. And Brian Hoyer comes in there and just flat out stinks up the joint and reminds us all why we never wanted to hear from him, for crying out loud, okay? And still, they were in that game until the ball went right through Julian Edelman's hands and into their arms and went for a pick 6. They were right there. Mm-hmm. 26-10 is a very deceiving score. We saw Patrick Mahomes pretty much held in check. We saw John Gruden sort of emulate what Bill Belichick had done against Patrick Mahomes the week before. And as a result, the Las Vegas Raiders were able to escape with a victory against those reigning defending Super Bowl champions led by a star quarterback in Patrick Mahomes. I'm just saying that when we look at New England, they're not supposed to be as relevant as they are, particularly without Cam Newton last week.
Yeah.
But somehow, some way, they showed you, and Bill Belichick reminds you, he knows what the hell he's doing.
No question.
And as a result, that makes them formidable,
and guys,
if their weapons come back.
So much of quarterback, the way we think of a quarterback, is branding. If a guy is drafted by a team high up and he stays with a team for 7 or 8 years, we think of him as a franchise quarterback, even if he's kind of middle of the pack. And if he starts to get traded or released or whatever the case may be, signs with another team, we start to think of him as a journeyman, right? And our estimation of him goes down, maybe like Andy Dalton right now. Cam Newton, because of the injury, we think of him differently. That's all. He was having maybe his best overall season, including the season that he won the MVP, at the moment he got injured. If he's healthy, guys, that's Cam freaking Newton. And we've seen it this year. And let's also talk about the wins that the Patriots have. They beat the Dolphins, who have been a competitive team. They lost by a field goal to the Bills. They just trounced the Niners, right? They beat the Dolphins. They beat the Raiders, who just beat the Chiefs. Like, their losses are quality. Their wins are better than given credit for, too. Cam Newton is still Cam Newton, and he's got Belichick. I like the Patriots.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. We got a major week 6 in the NFL, but first I need you to marinate on this. Stephen A's top 5 teams last week. Ravens at number 5, Bills at 4, Packers 3, the Seahawks in the runner-up spot behind the number 1 Chiefs. What has changed this week? Stephen A, don't mess this up.
A lot has changed, Molly Wood. A lot has changed. You know the list is fluid, Damian Woody. You know the list is fluid, Max Kellerman. What happened last week is not relevant to now. My top 5 teams in the National Football League for this week. Let's get to number 5 on the list. Give it to me, my Pittsburgh Steelers. Why? Ben Roethlisberger, have you seen this brother? After sitting out last year with the elbow injury, after week 1, what does he do? He misses the rest of the season. He comes back this year, COVID and all, completing 70% of his passes, 10 touchdowns, just 1 interception. And not only does he have Juju Smith-Schuster, not only does he have James Washington, he's also got the offensive rookie of the week, Chase Claypool, the brother special. Keep your eyes on him. And, oh, by the way, the defense ain't going anywhere. Minka Fitzpatrick, T.J. Watt, Stephon Tuitt, and those boys are still there. Steelers, top 5 team in the NFL. Still undefeated, by the way. Give it to me, number 4. The Titans. Why? Did you see the beat down against the Buffalo Bills? Did you see it? Did you see it? Did you see what Derrick Henry did to Josh Norman? Did you see how he posterized Josh Norman this way? I don't know if we'll ever look at Josh Norman the same after this. I just don't know. And I love the guy. I just don't know. I just don't know. That was very, very embarrassing, even though Derrick Henry has done that to people before in terms of the stiff arm, but not like that. But Tennessee not only beat Buffalo, they beat them all. Smash mouth football. Gotta respect these brothers. They're undefeated too. We can't ignore what we're seeing from the Tennessee Titans, but they're not this team. Let's go to number 3 on the list. Give it to me, please. The reigning defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs. Why? Because they're the champions, that's why. Because they have Patrick Mahomes, that's why. Because they have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. That's why. I know they just lost to the Las Vegas Raiders. I saw that Patrick Mahomes got outplayed by Derek Carr. That's why they went from number 1 to number 3. But that doesn't mean you take them completely off the list. When we know what they bring to the table, I've got them at 3 right now. Just not number 1 anymore. Let's go to number 2 on the list. Give it to me right now. The Seattle Seahawks. Why? They're undefeated at 5-0. That's why. They've got Russell Wilson who's completing nearly 73% of his passes. That's why. 19 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. They got DK Metcalf, who, by the way, I think somebody on Instagram or Twitter or somewhere said the modern-day Megatron. That's what DK Metcalf is looking at. I like that comparison with Tyler Lockett. Now, the defense, dead last in yards allowed and dead last against the pass. That's a problem. That's why they're not number 1. But I'll tell you why this team is number 1. Give it to me right here. The Green Bay Packers. Why? Because of Aaron Rodgers, that's why. Because look at what this brother is doing. 13 touchdowns, not a single interception, completing 70% of his passes. Their defense is better than Seattle's defense, which is why I would give them the edge over Seattle. And let's not ignore the fact that, again, you still got Devontae Adams, Valdez Scantling, Aaron Jones running the football effectively, and Aaron Rodgers playing lights out. Those are my top 5. Green Bay, Seattle, well, this is KC, Tennessee,
you did
Pittsburgh.
Good this week. First time this year.
Oh, please.
Look, this is not one of those, this is not one of those is Stephen A. crazy type weeks with this list. Those happen occasionally. Usually it's a good list. And I think this one is also a good list. Couple of minor quibbles, but I want to bring up maybe the most controversial one. I don't think the Steelers have a quality win so far this year. Not really. And I know that they have a loss, but the Bears are coming off a real quality win. They do have a loss, but they played one more game than the Steelers also. They also have a divisional win. But that, just think about that Bucs win for a second. The Bucs were favored by 3.5 points at Chicago, meaning at a neutral field they're considered a touchdown favorite. And the Bucs, had they won that game, would themselves be a one-loss team. Tom Brady, you know, he had a minute left. I would have orchestrated this comeback. And everyone, many people are still talking about the Bucs as viable Super Bowl contenders. Certainly, they'd be flying high. They'd probably be on your list. But the Bears beat them. And the Bears no longer have Trubisky under center. It's Nick Foles, who knows how to get the job done. I would argue, actually, the Bears on the merits deserve to be 5 over the Steelers. If the Steelers beat the Browns, we can talk about it again. But right now, I put the Bears at 5.
Stephen A., let me ask you about this. Ryan Tannehill is playing just as good a ball as Patrick Mahomes right now. If you look at QBR and the things that Ryan Tannehill is doing, the way he lit up the Buffalo Bills, could you slide the Tennessee Titans ahead of the Chiefs right now?
I could. It's a preference. I mean, I didn't want to slide the Chiefs from one to four.
People seem like they don't want to give Ryan Tannehill any credit, but the man is balling.
I got him top five. I got him top five. What do you want me to do, make cookies and milk for him? He's a tie. He's on my top five list.
I mean, hey, you put a team that got a loss ahead of him. I mean,
that's right.
Because
they're the reigning Super Bowl champions.
In one segment, you talking about the Tennessee Titans, how they beat down the Buffalo Bills, but then you got them behind the Kansas City Chiefs, who took an L at home against the Raiders?
Yeah, because they got Patrick Mahomes.
Shoot, and they got Tyreek Hill. The
and they got Travis Kelce.
It's nothing wrong with Hiccup.
I dropped them from one to three. I didn't want to drop them from one to four. I think it's easier to drop Kansas City from one to three and say, we know who you are. You had a hiccup last week, as opposed to me looking at Ryan Tannehill and saying, I will believe in you moving forward. And as it pertains to my Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm sorry, Max Kellerman, but with the Chicago Bears, they got their quality win. But damn it, I'm still not sold. I'm still not sold.
I feel like you haven't really shown your Pittsburgh Steelers much love this season anyway.
I'll give it to them now.
Yeah. Oh, you're a little late. I think it's because they're not as sexy and getting kind of old. Go ahead, Max.
I think you could put the Chiefs at number one still. I know their defense can't stop a nosebleed. They're coming off a bad loss. They weren't going to be undefeated this year. They're going to have two or three losses this year. Would anyone take any team against it right now? Any matchup you want in the NFL, who are you taking against the Chiefs on any given Sunday?
You can't make them one match after a loss you do it week to week.
I give the Packers a chance.
It's not your list.
I give the Packers a chance.
Come on, Max.
Because Aaron, you know why? Why? Because Aaron Rodgers is what? A bad man. You're nuts.
First of all, you're a little bit too corny to be saying that like that. If you're going to say it, say it right. Everybody else say it right. You got to say it right. He's a bad man. That's how you got to say it. You
give
it
to the
man. That's one of those oops moments that you do. That's one of those oops moments. You can't do that. You got to say it right.
Steve has been waiting all the time.
That's why I don't try.
Hold on. What'd you say, Damien? What did you say?
You've been waiting all this time to put Aaron Rodgers at number one. You've been just waiting.
At least I waited.
Checking off his calendar.
At least I waited. I didn't just do it for week one or two. I waited, right? And guess what? By the way, you've said enough. You don't have a tie on. I don't know if I'm going to allow you to continue to speak.
You're right. I don't have a tie on.
You, I don't even know if I'm allow you to even speak anymore. Just be zipping. Silence.
Damien, I think they look too buttoned up.
I like Damien giving Tannehill props, though.
Yeah, ain't that something? Ain't that something?
See, that's my guy.
He give Ryan Tannehill props. That is true. When the hell did you ever give to Ryan Tannehill props? When did that happen? When did that happen that you get to let
talk
about?
Why you keep disrespecting that man?
Why you never gave him respect?
You disrespect that man.
When did you give him respect?
You beat down the Buffalo Bills.
When did you give him respect?
You didn't give him no respect on your list.
Molly, that's he's true. Been, Damien Woody been
he's
on this show
right
for years.
He did beat down
wait a minute. Damien Woody, I said that too. Damien Woody has been on this show for years. He ain't never gave Ryan Tannehill
that's
no love.
That's what I said. Maybe he talked when to Mike time? Vrabel, you know, former teammate.
Maybe he talked to Mike Vrabel. He didn't talk to Mike Vrabel until this week. He ain't never gave Ryan Tannehill no love.
Hey, the whole time, your whole list, all you talked about was Derrick Henry.
He jumped on real quick.
You didn't even mention Ryan Tannehill.
I'll deal with you later, man. I might call in the NFL live. I might do something like that.
Hang on to that bandwagon. Hang on tight.
I got you.
We're done.
We're done.
All right. Last thing I got to say to you, though, you don't even really like the Steelers anymore.
I love my Steelers.
No, you don't.
I want a Super Bowl.
You're over them.
I want a Super Bowl.
You're like, there's
Listen,
no flash.
Just because you've given up on your Giants, don't act like you get to contaminate the rest of us. You have given up on Trevor. Stop it.
I believe we will get Trevor Lawrence. Max told you
I still believe in my Giants. Trevor Lawrence.
He ain't coming
to New York,
y'all. Can I interest anyone in a Daniel Jones for a fourth-round pick?
New York would not be receptive to that hairdo on Trevor Lawrence. It would not, not New York. It would not do that.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I was informed early this afternoon that I had a top positive test for COVID-19 on a PCR test. At this point, I'm completely asymptomatic, feel fine. Our medical officials have told me as long as I remain asymptomatic, I will have a daily PCR testing per SEC protocol to confirm the initial positive. We're still doing everything possible to get ready for the Georgia game, preparing our team. I'll have normal meetings tomorrow. Everything will be on Zoom. We'll continue to do this. You know, Sark's kind of filling in my absence for anything that needs coordinated in the office. But we're going to do everything we can to help our team, you know, get ready to play.
All right. I know Nick Saban said he's feeling fine, but of course, wish him a speedy recovery and everybody dealing with this awful disease. Paul Feinbaum with us now. Paul, it's always good to see you. I miss seeing you in person, my friend. So hopefully soon. We'll see what happens. Yes, of course. Guys, I'm going to start, actually, Paul, we'll get to you in just a second. I'm going to start with Stephen A. and Max here because we haven't had a chance to discuss this news yet. Obviously, Stephen A., Nick Saban testing positive, an inopportune time with the simple fact that it's one of their biggest games of the year. It's a 2-3 matchup. They're facing Georgia. What was your reaction when you heard this news? Because I know you have a relationship with him.
Well, then my first reaction was just praying and wishing him all the best. I do have a relationship with them to some degree. I've spoken at his program twice. Once in person and obviously one virtually. I'm incredibly fond of Nick Saban and the folks at the Alabama program, and I'm wishing him and the athletic director obviously a speedy recovery, nothing but the best of health. Mm-hmm. And I'm always here if they need me. They know that. Having said all of that, you know, this is not like the NFL. Like at the NFL, when I was talking about the players and some of the choices that they have made, let's understand that with college football, that is a different challenge. And I don't think anybody can accuse Nick Saban of not putting forth the necessary due diligence when it comes to his players and their program. I personally know of extensive safety protocols that they have engaged in to ensure the well-being of everybody involved. So the fact that he still ended up with something, that's kind of scary. Because you're thinking about wearing the mask,
he's
engaging.
So disciplined, buttoned up.
He's disciplined.
His program is top-notch.
Exactly. And he's been supportive of the players and what have you with their social justice issues and things of that nature, which Paul has come on this show and highlighted in the past, Paul. But in the end, what it comes down to at this particular moment in time, knowing his discipline, knowing his focus, and knowing how much he cares about ensuring the well-being, not just of the kids, but his entire program, his coaching staff, people that work in the athletic department, the list goes, the football department, the list goes on and on. For him, of all people, to come down with a positive test, it just shows you that any of us are susceptible.
None
of us are immune to it. And so when you see that and you witness that, you know, obviously your first initial concern was him. Mm-hmm. He's 68 years old. Mm-hmm. You all right, coach? Everything's okay? And, you know, he's asymptomatic at this particular moment in time, doesn't have any symptoms per se. But I'm just praying that it stays that way and this will subside. My number one thing is making sure, is hoping and praying that he's okay, mm-hmm. that his athletic director is okay. But obviously, there's a level of concern that should elevate in all of our eyes because there are very few of us on this planet that I believe is more disciplined and focused than Nick Saban.
Yeah.
And if he can find himself in this position, any of us can.
Mm-hmm. Max?
Yeah. First of all, just because you take precautions doesn't mean you can't get it. The virus is all over the place. So what you do is you lower the odds that you get it, and I'm sure he did. It seems like he has, and yet he got it anyway. So I totally co-sign what you just said, Stephen A. It's a good thing for us all to keep in mind. And then I thought, Nick Saban is 68 years old, pushing 70 years old. And this seems to be even more serious for older people, right? We always talk about the elderly and the and people with underlying conditions. And 68, you're not a spring chicken. And so you worry about Coach, of course. And you feel like you know him. I don't have a relationship with Nick Saban other than on TV. When I talk to him, you know, on TV. And yet, because he's been in my consciousness for so many years now, and you feel like you know him, just as someone who follows college football, someone who's aware of popular culture, you really, your heart goes out to him. You think, come on, Coach, get better, especially because he's older. And then I start to think, you know, and Nick Saban looks in pretty good shape, but if you are famous and rich and you get a certain level of care, the president, you know, and you know, who's also overweight, gets cutting-edge care and makes it through. But that's not most people who can afford to or have access to the kind of care Nick Saban will have access to. And so I find myself thinking, oh, thank God, I'm so happy that Nick Saban will have, you would suppose, top-notch care and that will increase his odds that he's fine. Phew. And then I think, yeah, but because I feel like I know Nick Saban, I feel that way, right? But there are literally millions of people in the country who have it and hundreds of thousands who have died, and many of them do not have access to that kind of care, and that's another thing that came to mind.
Paul.
Well, yeah, Molly, I mean, everything has been that Stephen A. and Max has said is true about Nick Saban. I mean, and that's what shocked everyone yesterday when this story broke about 5:45. I mean, you have the biggest game of the year. It's not just Nick Saban and some garden variety team. It's Nick Saban versus Kirby Smart, probably the closest coach out there to Nick Saban, on the biggest stage Saturday night. And he has done everything, but what, you know, what he couldn't avoid was get on a bus, stay at a hotel, go into meeting rooms, and none of us know, as all of you have so eloquently said, and that's the scary part. And you know, he's 68, he'll be 69 in 16 days. And yes, that is the age that you start to really worry about. So I think the concern is well thought out. And Saban did everything he could yesterday to calm everyone down. I mean, he looked good. I was on that call, as many others were, and he was laughing, he was joking, but that was early in the process. We don't know what's going on today. And by the way, he'll be tested every day. People are wondering, can he get to the game? You know, can they put him in a box? Well, if he has another positive test, he's done. He's not getting anywhere near Bryant Denny Stadium. And on top of that, guys, he's not going to be allowed to coach from home based on protocol. Now, well, is anyone going to be monitoring it? Is there going to be a spy in his Wi-Fi at home to stop him from communicating? I doubt it. And I'm betting that he is communicating somehow, some way. But it does cast a pall on not only that game, but on the college football season. We've already seen two games in the SEC postponed this week, including the LSU-Florida game, which was gargantuan. That was the game that Dan Mullen wanted to pack the swamp. He wanted 89,000 people there, Max. And now nobody's going to be there because he has 21 players on his team and a couple of assistants who have the virus. So as everyone has said for almost 7 months now, it takes no prisoners.
Paul, stay right there. And I know Alabama, they were testing them five times a week. The normal protocol was three times a week. They did everything they could, but he did get it. And as we all said, we wish him speedy recovery there. And we understand he is asymptomatic at this point. But let's talk about this game because it is a 2-3 matchup. It's a big one. It's Alabama, Georgia. And if he does have another positive test, it's going to be Steve Sarkisian, it appears right now, who will be coaching. Do you think that impacts the game?
Yes. I mean, Steve Sarkisian would not be my choice to send out into the biggest game of the year. He was average at Washington. He got fired at SC, as Maxwell knows, not because of what he was doing on the field, but because of what he was doing off the field. And, you know, he's not in Nick Saban's league. I mean, Nick Saban has such a tremendous impact, not only in that program, Stephen, you know it better than anyone here, but he's involved in every aspect, from the coin toss. He probably decides what the band plays at halftime. I mean, he is a micromanager because that is who he is. And if you watched last week's game, the defense was getting shredded, and Nick Saban was on Pete Golden, the defensive coordinator, from start to finish. He's involved, and he motivates, and players look over to him when they're not, when they miss a block, and they know he's going to be screaming at them. So they're playing harder. So yeah, I think it could have an effect. I still think it's a really, really, really close game, but but yes, Nick Saban matters.
I definitely think it can have an effect. There's no denying that, because Steve Sarkisian is no Nick Saban. We understand that. But I do have a solution. It's a very simple solution. Give the ball to Najee Harris. How about that? Give him the ball. Give him the ball. I mean, when all else fails, when all else fails, just hand him the ball.
Look,
206 yards rushing last week. Give him the ball, and that might assuage some concerns there. Just a thought.
Okay. Real quick, can I get this in? Because I've been wanting to ask you this. So our Mike Tannenbaum, Paul, had this tweet that made a lot of news saying that the last three number one overall picks in the NFL draft, Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, aren't even close to Clemson's Trevor Lawrence. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it was a great tweet, but I don't agree. I mean, I think Burrow is one of the better quarterbacks I've seen in a long time. Now, I would take Trevor Lawrence out of that group in the NFL, but, I mean, let's not lose sight of reality. I mean, those are all good players. Trevor Lawrence is the best. And I know everyone in New York is palpitating, you know, waiting for Trevor Lawrence, and they should. He could change one of those franchises, but he is not light years ahead of Joe Burrow, though.
Mm. Interesting.
Well, we don't really know. All right, listen, bottom line is this. If Joe Burrow was playing for somebody other than Cincinnati, we might not be saying this. But because he's on Cincinnati, we don't really know. We'll give Trevor Lawrence the edge. We hope that Joe Burrow's going to be all right. I think he's going to be all right. And Cincinnati's
Joe Burrow,
on the uptick.
Guys.
But, hey, it is what it is.
Yeah, Max?
Joe Burrow is also older and just more fit. You know, he lived longer than Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence is extremely precocious at the position and, as usual, set expectations unrealistically high by how good he was.
Yeah.
And now we have to readjust. But by the time he's 23, look out.
Yeah. Trevor Lawrence, first quarterback in NFL history. Throw the touchdown pass. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
I can't take him anywhere. It's his first day back.
Look at the hair. You know what I'm saying?
This is your second out-of-control comment. I'm distancing myself from that.